بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening and the return of our Imam, please recite the salawat. Over the course of these nights, we've tried to cover part of the very important era of the Khilafah and the government of Amir al-Mu'mineen, to try to learn from what happened during his lifetime after the demise of the Holy Prophet, so we can apply that to our lives today and make use of this month, the month of Ramadan, the month of self-purification, the month of Tawbah, to make use of this month to, inshallah, change those issues, those same problems that exist within us to a lesser or greater extent that are very similar to the problems that we see the people during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen had. These are not problems that are limited to a people of that time. One mistake that we make, and I've heard this over and over again, is that we, for our own comfort, decide to look at that part of history and attribute the actions, attribute the wrongdoings, the wrong decisions, following the wrong people, not following the right people, attribute that to a certain people of a particular city, just to ease things for ourselves. To say, yes, the people of Kufa were like this, the people of Kufa were like that. Somehow thinking that the people of Kufa are innately or by birth, at birth, they have these problems. This is not the case. If we look at history in that way, the problem we will have is that we're actually not going to benefit from it. The more we study it, we just look at it as mistakes that they made that doesn't apply to us. But when we look at it and we realize that actually that's not the case, I've said this to people and it's good to hear it every now and then. The fact is, out of all the believers that you have at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen within the Muslim Empire, the only ones that come forth and support Amir al-Mu'mineen are the people of Kufa. Others don't even come and support. Some people, I've heard them say this, whether it's with regards to the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen or Imam al-Mujtaba or Imam al-Husayn, salamullah alayhi. And they explain the situation, or they say, yes, these people, they did such and such and so on and so forth. We fail to realize they were actually the best of the believers of their time. Why is it that Imam al-Husayn chose to go towards Kufa? We always say that the people of Kufa wrote 12,000 letters and then they betrayed him. Well, guess what? People of the other cities didn't even write 12,000 letters. They didn't even ask the Imam to go. When the Imam went to Mecca from Imam al-Husayn, from Medina, he went to Mecca for the few months that he was there until the 9th of Dhul Hijjah. Nobody came and said, oh, we are the people of Yemen, come, we'll support you. They didn't come and say, we are the people of Sham, come, we'll support you. They didn't come and say, we're people of Khorasan, come, we'll support you. It was the people of Kufa that came and said, we're going to support you. So actually, they're the best of the believers at that time. And they failed. That makes it a lot more serious for us when we look at it in that way. So we've been trying to look at the problems, the issues, and we want to make use of the month of Ramadan to change things in ourselves and hopefully in our families and in our communities. One of the elements that led to what we see happening during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen and the people not following through with his instructions is something that we very clearly laid out and we tried to explain, and that was ittiba'ul hawa wa tulul amal, the combination of these two, following desires and one's thought process, the direction in their life. Instead of looking at the akhirah, they forget the akhirah, they just start having a lot of wishes about this dunya. So the direction is no longer God, it's no longer the hereafter, it's no longer the rewards that God gives in the hereafter, but rather it is something that's in this dunya. When that becomes your direction, even if you are doing the wajibat and muharramat temporarily, you're doing it with the objective of acquiring something in this dunya. That actually becomes extremely dangerous. Religion becomes a means of obtaining the dunya in that case. If what you're looking at, what your goal is, what your objective is the dunya, you don't look at the akhirah. If you are following the wajibat and the rules of muharramat, and your objective is this dunya, then you're actually going to be starting to make use of religion and the religious instructions for the betterment of your dunya. And wherever it stands in the way of you obtaining the benefit of the dunya, you're going to start deviating from that. That's why the combination of those was mentioned. Taba'ul hawa, tulul amal. This was one problem. We mentioned it explicitly. We tried to explain how this gradually came into becoming a social problem that Amir al-Mu'mineen had to deal with. This was the fertile grounds for the problems arising during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen. But it wasn't the only problem. It wasn't the only problem. But it is something that led to other problems. This was the cause of everything else. If the believers hadn't developed this, they hadn't moved in the direction of the dunya, they hadn't developed the trait of ittiba'ul hawa wa tulul amal, then what you see happening during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen would not have happened. I hope to remember to go back to that hadith that we mentioned yesterday, a particular passage of it. The words of the Imam explicitly say this. And it is because this is such an important factor in the problems that came up at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen that we spent so much time talking about that. And we really, really, really have to try our best to try to get rid of this problem in ourselves. And this is the best month to try to do this, try to change that in ourselves, in our families, in our communities, inshallah. Some of the other elements were, we said that the people have got to be classified into two categories. There was two ways we did this. One of the ways we did this is the following. Some of the people in the community of believers, amongst believers, amongst Muslimin, in the Ummah of Islam, which form the majority of the believers, unfortunately, they suffer from the problem of not having insight into what's going on. Not making decisions based on understanding. This is what we mean by insight. People who have insight are people who will not make decisions without fully understanding. this guy saying this, the other guy saying that, is not going to cause them to take stances and make a decision, especially on important matters related to the community or related to the Muslim ummah at large. Hearsay, this guy saying this, the other guy saying that, that's not something that's going to cause them to make decisions. If a person has insight, first of all, they're constantly looking into matters, studying what's going on around them. They're very careful. If we want to use the example of a driver, because we're trying to move about and on the right path. If you have a driver that is not conscious and aware of what part of the road they're on and what the circumstances are, what the weather circumstances are, is the road wet, is it not, is it snowy, is there sleet, what's the temperature like, what's the traffic like, and so on and so forth, that person is going to make a wrong decision when they suddenly realize that their brakes are not working. They're not prepared for it. But a person who is conscious, they're aware of exactly what's going on the road, and they're going to make accurate decisions based on the circumstances that they're in. They're always conscious of what's going on around them. A person with insight is going to be like that. They are studying, they're fully aware of what's happening in their own personal lives, in their family lives, in the community, who's doing what. They follow up on it. When we look at the bigger picture, which increasingly is becoming more global, that we all need to have that, national and global, they're going to be aware and conscious of what is actually going on. You have those believers, that's one class of believers. Then you have one class of believers that is careless, moving about their business and just worried about little things in their lives and what happens in their family, who said what, and so on and so forth. But they're not really conscious of themselves. They're not really conscious and have a good assessment of their families, and they don't have a good assessment of their communities, and they don't have a good assessment of what's happening on a national level, much less on a global. If they follow news as a hobby, as something that they like to do, it's just, you know, flipping through the pages of the newspaper or going online, checking a few websites to see what you have on the news, how many people got killed in Gaza today, for example, and how many people got killed in, God forbid, in Iraq. I haven't, unfortunately, been following that in the last couple of days and what's happening over there in Iraq. So just casually, just look at a couple of sites. What does New York Times say, or CNN, or this or that? Or those who even say, okay, we don't listen to any of this. Go and watch Press TV. Go watch, I don't know, Al Alam. Or say, I don't want to watch those. I want to watch Al Minar, or whatever. Just casually doing that. They're not really on top of it. They don't know who's doing what. They don't know why, for example, Daesh enters Iraq. They don't understand why Daesh comes to be in Syria. They don't understand why the Syrian conflict starts to form. What are the reasons for that? Who's doing what in that scene? They don't realize, they don't understand. They don't see a difference between what happens in Syria and what happens in Egypt, what happens in Bahrain and what happens in Yemen, what happens in Pakistan, what happens in Afghanistan, what happened in Libya. Just casually following the news. At the time of Amirul Mu'mineen, you have these two classes of believers, people that are not, they see Ali ibn Abi Talib salamullah alayhi as a companion of the Holy Prophet. Who is he really? Is he someone that's appointed by the Holy Prophet? Is he the one that's supposed to be leading? There's another companion called Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan. That's another companion of the Holy Prophet. There's another companion called Talha, another one called Zubayr. If Ali ibn Abi Talib is the Ahlul Bayt of the Holy Prophet, then so is in a sense, the literal meaning of the word. We're not talking about the theological discussion of it. The literal meaning of the word, well, the holy wife's prophet, the holy prophet's wife, excuse me, the holy prophet's wife is also part of the Ahlul Bayt. That's what it seems. That's what the literal meaning of the word Ahlul Bayt means. The people, the household of the prophet. Whoever lives with the prophet. Okay, well, all these people are there. This guy's saying this, the other guy's saying that. Who's really being truthful here? Because they haven't really followed it up. Now that there's a conflict, they're not able to distinguish. They're not on top of things. They just suddenly see what's going on. Why do we have to kill each other? Why do believers have to kill each other? When the battle of Siffin comes together, in the process of it actually, when Amir al-Mu'mineen very correctly identifies Muawiyah as the enemy of Islam, at and upon the death of the third Khalifa, and the motives of Muawiyah having nothing to do with Uthman, he identified that from day one. It wasn't the matter of allowing Muawiyah to lead over Sham for a temporary period of time. That would only make sense if Muawiyah is just simply wanting to have Sham. Amir al-Mu'mineen correctly identified that no, Muawiyah wants the whole thing. He wants the entire Muslim empire. He doesn't want just Sham. If he just wanted Sham, yes, Amir al-Mu'mineen had certain governors. He allowed them to continue and remain as governors of certain regions. These governors were appointed by the third Khalifa. He didn't change them temporarily. But Muawiyah isn't like that. Muawiyah's motives are to take over the whole country. He's the enemy of Amir al-Mu'mineen. He's the enemy of Islam. He wants to have himself rule over this country, the Muslim empire. Amir al-Mu'mineen correctly identified that. People didn't identify that. They said, well, let him rule for a while there. Then when he started writing his letters to Muawiyah, and Muawiyah started claiming that this is the reason why we're doing this is because of the third Khalifa being killed and we need to bring the killers to justice and so on and so forth, many things happen. We don't have time really to go over all the details, what the letters were like. One of the tactics, for example, that Muawiyah used, he was trying to, he knew that Amir al-Mu'mineen did not agree with the Khilafah of even the first two Khulafa. That was something Muawiyah knew, because obviously he was there. He knew about Ghadir, he knew about the conflict between Amir al-Mu'mineen and the first two Khulafa, but the majority of people didn't know. They were not knowledgeable of that. What Muawiyah tried to do was he tried to play on and to get Amir al-Mu'mineen to take stances against the first two Khalifas, which the people actually thought of as very good believers. They thought them to be very good believers. They thought them to be very good rulers. They thought them to be very competent rulers. They didn't think of the second Khalifa or the first Khalifa as being terrible people. Muawiyah wanted to get Amir al-Mu'mineen to say something against the first two Khalifas to cause people to say, wait a second, what's going on here? And these people that admired the first two Khalifa, the followers of Amir al-Mu'mineen, would stop following Amir al-Mu'mineen. He did many things. That's one of the tactics. One of the other tactics was to create confusion on the basis of there being Muslimin on both sides of the battle. In all the battles that Amir al-Mu'mineen fought, both parties, both sides of the conflict were Muslimin. These are more difficult battles. If you look at today's context, we have a similar situation. Of course, there's a lot of similarities, and I wish believers would really look at that and see the similarities and try to identify what's actually going on. If we look at the Muslim Ummah, the Muslim nation, One of the mistakes, let me say this right now, one of the mistakes we make is that in our minds, we don't believe in a Muslim ummah that consists of anything other than Shia. Or if we're not Shia, the majority of us would be considering the Muslim ummah to exclude Shias. Both of those are incorrect. The ummah of the Holy Prophet includes all Muslimin. It includes all Muslimin. Amir al-Mu'mineen has said this, the Holy Prophet has said this, the rest of the Imams have said this. That's a discussion that can go on. Part of the Muslim Ummah, both parts of the Muslim Ummah, are confused currently. On what? On the issue of Daesh. The Muslim Ummah is confused. How so? Some of the Ahlus Sunnah, some of them, and I hope they're very small in number, think that what Daesh or other terrorist organizations and groups that are fighting in Syria are actually Islamic jihadists, and they're actually doing very well. Killing who? Killing other believers, but they are Shia or supported by the Shia, whether it's the Islamic Republic or the Shia movement in Lebanon, resistance in Lebanon. People that are getting killed by these terrorist organizations are also believers. Those believers, the Muslimin that are not Shia, are confused. They think that they need to support that, and they think that Hezbollah in Lebanon or the Islamic Republic of Iran is against Sunnis in that conflict in Syria. And now it has extended to Iraq. And if you look at the media, that's something that they're constantly pumping into the media so that we look at it and we feel that that is the case. And the reverse is happening for the Shia. The Shia are starting to think that, why should we consider Ahlus Sunnah as part of the Ummah? No, we need to go fight them. These are Sunnis. Sunnis are doing this to our brothers in Bahrain. Sunnis are doing this to our brothers and sisters in Syria. Zainabiyah is being attacked by Sunnis. And now Daesh, who's coming into Iraq, is Sunnis. Not only are they Sunnis, they are also Palestinians. Some of them are Palestinians, they say. So why should we care about the Palestinians? Why should we care about this? Why should we care about that? The tactic of confusion that was used by Muawiyah at that time is being used today as well. The Muslim Ummah, there's a lot of confusion in it. Muawiyah used that tactic as well. He caused people in Kufa, the Qurra, the students of Ibn Mas'ud, who were reciters of the Qur'an, people that understood the Qur'an a little more than others, people who had studied a bit of tafsir. Ibn Mas'ud is actually one of the companions of the Holy Prophet. So he taught the people, a number of the people in Kufa, the Qur'an. What Muawiyah did, he caused confusion and he caused these Qurra to come to Amir al-Mu'mineen and to tell him, Ya Ali, they actually explicitly said this, we're confused here. We don't know if you're right or Muawiyah is right. We can't pick sides. So allow us, we don't want to be part of this conflict. Send us to the borders where the Muslimin are fighting Kuffar. We would like to fight the Kuffar. We don't want to fight the Muslimin. There was a lot of confusion. Before the incident of the Battle of Siffin, when Amir al-Mu'mineen was trying to gather the troops, confusion was created. When Amir al-Mu'mineen got there, still, this is a serious conflict between Amir al-Mu'mineen and Muawiyah. It's not simply two people coming together and just deciding that, you know, they're going to be fighting. No, Muawiyah is very clever. When they go over there, still Muawiyah is trying to use tactics to cause confusion, to win the battle without even beginning the battle. He has a number of these Qurra. They were reciters of the Qur'an, people who knew the Qur'an. Some of them came from Kufa. Not all of the students of Ibn Mas'ud decided not to come with the Imam. Some of them came. Some of the other Qurra from other regions controlled by Amirul Mu'mineen had also come. And there were Qurra from Sham, and these people knew each other to a certain extent. They said, well, let's try to resolve this issue. Why fight? Why bloodshed? Both sides are Muslimin. Let's try to resolve this. See, their mentality is, their thought process is, that this is simply a conflict between two believers. There's a misunderstanding. Let's try to resolve this issue. They didn't realize that, no, this is not a matter of misunderstanding. This is a matter of an enemy of Islam wanting to destroy Islam, and the leader of the Muslimin that's trying to get rid of that enemy. That's what it's like. But Amir al-Mu'mineen allowed them. He said, okay, if you want to do this, go ahead. He already knew what the response is going to be, what the talks are going to be like. They went back and forth. They went to Muawiyah. Why do you want to do this? He said, they need to bring the killers to justice. Amir al-Mu'mineen explains to them. Muawiyah is lost for words. He doesn't have a response. He doesn't have anything to get back on that argument of bringing the killers of Uthman to justice. He brings up another excuse. Amir al-Mu'mineen responds to that one. He brings another excuse. He doesn't say, look, the enemy is not going to come and say, look, we want to get rid of Islam. They're not going to come and tell you, we want to destroy the Mu'mineen. They're not going to come and tell you, we want your oil. They're not going to do that. They're going to come and say, we want to bring you democracy. Right? That's how they're going to come forth. They're not going to come and tell you, we want your oil. We want the natural resources. We want to control the world. They're going to come and tell you, no, we're worried about what's going on here, weapons of mass destruction, democracy, so on and so forth. Muawiyah, similarly, he wasn't going to come and say, look, it doesn't matter what you guys say. Unless Amir al-Mu'mineen steps down, or Ali ibn Abi Talib steps down, this battle is going to kick off. He's not going to come and say that. This continued, this idea of causing confusion. Amir al-Mu'mineen kept having to clarify. One of the other things some of you may have heard, when Ammar ibn Yasir was fighting alongside Amir al-Mu'mineen against Muawiyah, some of the companions remembered a hadith that the Holy Prophet had mentioned. He said that there will be a fight in which Ammar ibn Yasir is on one side and there's another party fighting against them. Whichever party it is that Ammar is fighting against is the party of Batil. They are wrong. And the one who Ammar has joined are the right people, the real believers. And if he's killed, then the people who killed him are the bad people. Now, Ammar got killed in that battle. So they started saying, oh, see, Amir al-Mu'mineen's people said, it's clear, the saying of the Holy Prophet, these are the people that are testifying. The companions of the Holy Prophet that were on Muawiyah's side, they also heard that. They testified to it. But Muawiyah tried to flip the meaning of it and said, oh, we're not the cause of his death. Ali caused the death. He came and started fighting us. We didn't cause his death. It's pretty clear. When you first look at the statement of the Holy Prophet, it seems pretty clear. But when you twist it, then people start getting confused. Which people? The people that do not have that insight. Okay? People who do not look to study and understand the circumstances around them, who's doing what their motives, what their intentions behind it are. So this is the second problem that happened or existed at that time. And we really, brothers and sisters, are in need of changing this in our day and age. We are in serious need of it. It might not seem to you or to many believers that this subject of having insight into what's going on in the world around you, whether it's locally here in Dallas, locally here in Mu'min Center, in even going further down to your family, we don't think that understanding the circumstances locally and nationwide and globally is something that is related to spirituality, something related to the tawbah that is mentioned in the month of Ramadan. But whoever thinks in that way, I have to give it to them that it's definitely wrong. Okay. Amirul Mu'mineen is telling all of us followers of the Ahlul Bayt that the only people that will be able to be with the party of the Ahlul Bayt are Ahlul Basar wa Sabr, people that have that insight and people that have patience. Okay. It's related to this month, brothers and sisters. We have to make the intention of changing that. We have to become people that are fully aware of what is actually happening. It will take time. If we haven't developed that up to this point, which the majority, I can't really have a clear judgment of the specific community members here in Mu'min, but I can say that the majority of believers worldwide are confused. When I hear that the question of confusion with regards to the Zionist aggression that's happening right now and the Day of Quds, and people thinking, why should we go and support the Palestinians against the Zionist regime, it's clear to me that we have a lot of shortcomings in this area. It should be clear to us who the Zionist entity is, why it is that before even the revolution, Imam Khomeini said, this is something we need to fight against. A lot of us don't know this. Before the beginning of the movement led by Imam Khomeini in the Iranian calendar 1342, it really started kicking off. Before that, Imam Khomeini was bringing awareness to the people against the Zionist regime. The Iranian regime prior to the Islamic Revolution was the biggest supporter of the Zionist regime in the Middle East. If you see the Saudis right now being the main supporters, before the revolution, it was actually the Shah's government that was the biggest supporter of the Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini realized that what was happening in the Muslim Ummah, the cause of it behind the scenes is the Zionist entity, the Zionist network of evil that I think what I can say about it is that this country that they have fabricated, they call it Israel, this is the tip of the iceberg, brothers and sisters. The Zionist entity is not the country that is referred to as Israel. The Zionist entity is spread out throughout the world. And what they are doing, whether it's Daesh in Iraq, Daesh in Syria, it is Assisi in Egypt, or what happens in Libya, the Al Khalifa government in Bahrain, or what happens, the drones in Pakistan, all of this is part of the global network of Zionists that are causing all of it and having their puppets do things. People should be clear of that. People should be aware of that. We should have, I mean, it's been over 30 years that our ulama have been telling us this. After 30 years, still we have issues with understanding this. The matter of not having insight, brothers and sisters, was one of the major elements that caused what happened during the time of Amir al-Mu'mini. If it wasn't for this, the Battle of Siffin would have been won. You've heard the stories. Malik al-Ashtar was right by the tents of Muawiyah. When you hear that, it's painful. I don't know if we're able to really feel what it's like. A battle that was victorious. Muawiyah was getting ready to escape, and Malik al-Ashja'i would have followed him and finished him off. That battle was lost. Why? Because of the lack of insight. When they put the Qur'ans on the spears and said, oh, we're all Muslims. The lack of insight. When you don't have insight, paired with that love of the dunya, with ittiba'ul hawa, getting tired of fighting, was a very difficult battle that they fought. They give in. When people come and guide them in that direction, which is the last point. So we've talked about two. One is ittiba'ul hawa and tulul amal. Second is the lack of insight. The majority of believers at that time did not have that insight. Amir al-Mu'mineen kept having to explain, they would still not get it. He would say, Ammar, you explain to them. Ammar would explain, sometimes it would work, they would get it. When Ammar was gone, when he became shaheed, the famous saying of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Aina Ammar, when did he say this? When did he say, where is Ammar? I need Ammar here. I need another Ammar. Why? Because he's telling people they're not getting it. They're not seeing it. They don't have the insight. He guides them in the right direction. They're not seeing it. So that's the second. The third, which is also very important, these three come together. These are not independent causes. The third is this: wrong leadership. Wrong leadership. What do we mean by that? The understanding we have, brothers and sisters, which is a very, I think, unreal understanding of leadership, is this. That, for example, who is your leader right now? If they ask you, as a Shia, what are you going to respond? What are you going to say? You're definitely going to say, my leader is the Imam of my time. I don't think you're going to respond in any other way. So that's my leader. Okay. But the question that I have for you is, if he's your leader, how are you following him? Do you even know what he's saying? Do you even know what his instructions are? You're not following him. We're not following him. Who are we following? Some of us following the media. That's our leader. A leader is the one that we listen to and we follow. If someone is listening to the media and they control their opinion and give them guidance and direct them which direction to move towards, that is their leader. That is their leader. If somebody is listening to one of the ulama, that is their leader. If somebody is listening to another of the ulama, that is their leader. If they're listening to a layperson, that is their leader. Whoever you're listening to, that is going to be considered your leader, whether you like it or not. That's why on the Day of Judgment, it says that every people will come with their imam, whoever's been leading them in life. They say, oh, my imam is Ali ibn Abi Talib. Like, sorry, that's what you thought you had as a leader. That's not your leader. You were following this guy. He was telling you, this is what Ali said, and you blindly followed him. That's not what Ali said. You followed him. He's your imam. You're going to go towards hellfire. The person that you take as a leader, really, okay, not hypothetically, not just some religious, spiritual concept in our minds, that there is this leader of ours, that we speak to him, we call him the imam of our time, we shed tears and so on and so forth. He's my leader. That, yeah, we have that connection, inshallah. That spiritual dimension needs to be there without a shadow of a doubt. But who is it really that we're listening to? We got to look at that. Between us and the imam, if we're really trying to follow the imam, there are going to be intermediaries. During the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the imam of the ummah was Amir al-Mu'mineen. People should have listened to him, right? But there were influential figures in the society they lived in that community, that people would follow their words. If those leaders, if people were not careful and to select those leaders, pick those leaders based on what is right and what is wrong, they would end up following the wrong leaders, and eventually those leaders would move them away from haqq, Amir al-Mu'mineen has a khutbah on this. He has a khutbah on this. And I think it's very important for us to take this into consideration. What is the khutbah? He says, there are two individuals that are the worst and most despised by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Two types of people. Who are they? Both of them are leaders that are leading in the wrong direction. When we see the description, we see that these are leaders that are leading in the wrong direction. How do they become leaders? The lay people, the people without insight, start following them. People without insight start following them. Why do they follow them? Why do they pick these two? The description that the Imam gives, I think, is going to speak for itself. It says there's two people. One, the first one. A person who doesn't know the right path, person who doesn't know what direction to give to the people, but he's a very well-known worshiper. He prays a lot. He fasts. He goes to Hajj every year. He's got a pretty big beard. He tries to act in a way where he looks humble. He appears to be humble. A person who doesn't know what haq and batil is, why do the people listen to him? Because of the image that he has as a very pious person. If a person develops that type of an image in the community that they are living in, naturally you are going to have some of the people without that insight gravitate to that person. Okay. People like religiosity. If we are religious people, we like to be with people that are worshippers, people who are praying, people who are fasting, people who are going for Hajj. We like that. There's nothing wrong with that. But them being the ones that start directing us one way or the other, becoming our leaders, that's one. We got to be careful of that. We have to be careful that there will be people, we are going to start following them simply because the religious image they have. And they'll be moving in the wrong direction, but we will follow them. And this is a very, very serious problem that believers have. In the Muslim Ummah today, this is happening. In the different communities, in different ways. In the different communities, in different ways. You have those very religious figures that would come and say, for example, Muharram is not the time to talk about anything except for Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. If you start talking about the application of Karbala today and say, oh, this sheikh came here this year and we barely heard the name of Imam al-Husayn. And they look very religious, they're very pious, shedding tears for Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, maybe doing more than that, shedding blood for Abu Abdullah al-Husayn maybe. And people think to themselves, wait a second, he's right, you know, is this supposed to be happening? People get confused. They start moving in the wrong direction. They come and say, we shouldn't go for the Quds rally. We shouldn't not have the Jum'ah prayer here at the center. We should have it here. We shouldn't have it there. Why should we support that? Why should we support this? This is one group of leaders that we will take them. If we don't have that insight, we will take them as leaders. And that's going to be very dangerous. I've given the example. Abu Musa al-Ash'ari was the example during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And the last one, the second group that is going to cause that deviation, people will take them as leaders. And this is very scary. We have to be careful. And that's why we're insisting on the idea of having insight. Are people, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, people that the lay people consider them to be knowledgeable. Knowledge is a powerful tool. not actual knowledge, having the image of being a knowledgeable person, being considered an alim, a scholar, a knowledgeable speaker, someone who has the authority to speak and explain Islam, explain religion. That's very dangerous. The Imam says, يَحْسَبُهُ النَّاسِ. People, the lay people, the ones without insight, the ones who haven't studied, the ones who don't look into it, consider this person to be an alim, an authority. But in fact, the person doesn't really have that authority. As they go along, they start making up what Islam means. They start fabricating meanings of hadith. They don't need to create new hadith in this day and age. All they need to do is misinterpret a verse of the Holy Quran, misinterpret a hadith of the Holy Prophet, misinterpret a hadith of Imam al-Sadiq, and so on. They'll make it up. The lay person that is not aware, that hasn't developed the insight, is going to take that person as a leader. They're going to start following them. Then when that leader says, do this or the other, we're going to follow them. These are serious threats, brothers and sisters. These are very serious threats that we are all facing. If we're able to move away from ittiba'ul hawa, if we are able to make sure that the direction in our life is the akhirah, number one. If we're able to, in this month of Ramadan, change the way we are and start developing that insight, understanding, in-depth understanding of the circumstances, then we will come to the third step and we will realize that this person that we used to think, oh, they're a good person to listen to, no, they're not a good person to listen to. They're leading the people astray. We will realize that this speaker or this alim or this sheikh or this sayyid or this even ayatullah, God forbid, is not someone that we should be listening to. They're moving the people in the wrong direction. If we take those two first steps, this third problem will also be eradicated, inshallah. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, by the right of the Imam, by the right of Amir al-Mu'mineen, that he grants us the ability to change our lives, change the direction of our lives from the dunya to the akhirah, to consider the rida of Allah our true motive in life, in everything we do, in our work, in our family life, in our personal life, to inshallah in this month start to move towards developing insight, developing basirah of the religion, of the circumstances we're in. And we ask him to help us to be able to see the evil in some of the leaders that are seen to be pious or seen to be knowledgeable, and so that we don't follow them and we follow the pious ulama that lead us in the direction of the Imam of our time, inshallah. Bin Nabi wa Ala, rahimallah man qara al-Fatiha ma'as salawat.